There will be no no-go areas for taxis. You will be expected to go to any destination within a 6-mile radius of Charing Cross. You are compelled to take a hiring if you're found standing on a highway or on a taxi rank. So what part of that agreement is not being upheld? By stripping away the use of infrastructure, is TfL, along with the local authorities, denying you your democratic right to earn a living? And if they are restricting trading, then what are you going to do about it? Stay ahead of the debate when the clock strikes 12 and again at 4 p.m. This is Sean Paul Day, and you are listening to the Indomitable London Taxi Radio.
London Taxi Radio.
This week's news headlines from Taxi Leaks News Desk. A fifth New York cabbie has taken his own life after his income plummeted due to competition from Uber. A 67-year-old man, Keith Gilling, who pretended to be a minicab driver to trap and rape women, has been jailed for life. Hacker Grant West, who stole Uber account details to sell on the dark web, has been jailed for 10 years. The Met Police finally admit they let officers moonlight as minicab drivers. Mike Brown has apologised on LBC for the ill-judged expansion of the cycle superhighway, blamed by many for the gridlock and the increase in pollution. As predicted, Visa has doubled transaction charges to 8%, London cabbies ask. How long before our transaction fees are doubled? And finally, Uber admit it was never fit and proper to be a private hire operator. They've asked TfL for an 18-month licence to prove they have changed and moved forward.
Bye. That's it, we're here. Two false starts today. Me and Myrna, how about that? We've only been at it since 8 o'clock this morning. No, we've done all right. We've done all right. I'll be bringing Myrna in a bit later in the show. But there's a few things to talk about today, isn't there? One significant issue happened this week. Well, there's a couple of significant things that have happened. But certainly, we've got an issue where a ruling was made against a driver in the High Court. And it was concerning the Disability Act. Now, if you're a driver, and we know there's drivers out there with a pair of binoculars looking in the distance for disabled people, and the meter may go on when they get their binoculars out thinking they need a taxi. That might be the case. But generally, I think we're okay. And we wouldn't dream of thinking because of their disability, we'll make more money out of it. But there is an instinctive thing, isn't there, to put the meter on. And I think maybe that's not been taken into consideration. But you could say we need to be more considerate with doing that. So that might not be an arguable point. But I'll read you this, because this isn't a new kind of act of Parliament. This is something that was in place in 2010, and it was just the explanatory memorandum as being prepared by the Department of Transport in 2017, in fact. So it was last year that this came into force, and it was about the Section 165 of the Equality Act, 2010. So the onus on taxi drivers to not treat passengers any different depending on their disability or ability, then it's been in place since 2010. It's been enforced, seemingly enforced, since 2017 and acted on in this a ruling against the cab driver. The thing is, the LTDA say they're appealing. Now, there might be an appeal case to be had. I'm not sure. And I would like people, if they could, they could tweet us and say on what grounds would they appeal this? Because you could say, if it's an automatic response, you could say that I put the meter on if I'm going around to get luggage in. Maybe I shouldn't be doing that either. But putting the meter on when someone comes to your window, the verbal agreement, and then the acceptance that you're going to take a hiring, the meter goes on. A couple of people called up insurance companies, which is interesting, isn't it? And I'm not saying the insurance companies are right, but they call up the insurance companies and they have asked about this. And they said, well, it's a verbal agreement. Once you say you're hired, you're hired. The meter is a physical reaction to the verbal agreement. And insurance-wise, would they be covered if the meter wasn't on? Because if there is a trail or if there is a thread back, what's happening, then it might only be from the meter. Now, it may not be. But if there is a trail, a thread to be had of any evidence at all of any transgression of that law, then it might be the meter. And the meter would suggest, yes, you're hired, now you're insured. Whatever happens, now you are insured. There could be an argument to say, well, no, you didn't engage the driver. The meter wasn't engaged. And so the insurers are not going to cover you. I think that would be very harsh. More harsh even than any cabbie that wants to make money out of disabled. And I don't think that was the case. I'm not sure. I wasn't there. But I find it hard to believe. And I know there's some subjectivity in that. But I do find it hard to believe. But nevertheless, this isn't just about, is it that we just, it's something we do and we kind of don't put much thought into it. And if that was the case, but it wasn't the case because there was a big argument, wasn't there, about it. So it would have been on the basis of what was said in the argument, I am sure. And cabbies, the problem here is, and the problem I have with it, it's easy to hijack a cabbie if you want to hijack it, isn't it? And I know there was doing the secret shopper. Now, if somebody gets in the cab and says something like Marble Arch Hotel. Now, there's one or two, I think. But you probably would say, oh, hang on a second, which one? Which is not a bad thing to say, is it? Which one? And then they start getting a bit shirty over it. Then what should the response be? The response should be consumers always right. But it's very difficult to expect that when you get a good dose of passenger opinion on a daily basis, don't you? So to stay calm, when the intention is to rile you up, is a little bit unfair, I think. I think cabbies can be easily hijacked, as anybody could. So I don't know whether this was a setup. It seems grossly unfair that he would do that. But I would like to know, and this is the point of it, regardless of your opinion, I would like to know on what basis would the appeal be. Because it could be the insurance companies are right. It could be that they're not right. Because if someone, an able person, comes up to my window, says, can I get in? I put the meter on. If a disabled person comes up to my window, I put the meter on. That could be equality in itself, couldn't it? If you have intentionally put it on, knowing that it'll take longer to put them in the cab, assist them into the cab, then you are unfairly charging them. But at the point of the verbal agreement, we are being equal, aren't we? We are taking in to consideration equality, aren't we, by treating people the same. But then it's what happens after that is a bit of a problem, isn't it? The time it takes, no different to maybe putting lots of luggage in. Should you do the same? But this is the Disability Act we're talking about here, not someone with lots of luggage. And so there could be a difference, but then they are being treated differently. And so I think it's an odd one. Look, bit of devil's advocate there. No need to jump all over it, because I could do that myself. But interesting to know what the appeal would be on, isn't it? So there's that to consider. And opening up, it is just a grievance, a real big grievance. The information that came from Bank Junction about the buses being greatly reducing accidents. Buses, you know, they're the ones that have reduced the accidents, so they must have been the ones that increased the accidents. But the transients through Bank Junction, buses, are doing really well. Their times have improved. And I have a problem with that in and of itself. And then you've got fewer casualty rates. So less fatalities, less serious accidents, and fewer, just a little bit of a scuff, a knock. I think cyclists are causing most of them myself. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because you could say, well, that's it. We don't stand a chance of getting through Bank Junction. And pollution levels have dropped in the area. But the real problem I have with this, and this is before we go to another song, and I will bring in Myrna because she's fidgeting, shuffling about on her seat. But the real thing I have with this is the traffic modelling is only focused on the area that they monitor. So they don't do peripheral routes. They don't judge Cannon Street. They don't go and check Bishopsgate. They don't go into other areas further than Bishopsgate or even towards Holborn Viaduct. They don't do that. What they do is they focus on the traffic modelling, the traffic exemption they've put in, and they go, right, we'll test this area. And of course it's going to show a reduction in pollution. Of course it's going to show a reduction in traffic. And of course it is going to show fewer accidents, isn't it? But they don't show an increase in accidents on peripheral routes, an increase in pollution on peripheral routes. And I think that is a consequence of preventing traffic from going through Bank Junction, isn't it? So it's absurd, because the results are always going to come out favourable for them, aren't they? Now, that's bizarre. Now, there comes a time, doesn't there, when you have to go, I don't care about everything else, I care about trade. Because there was a time, wasn't there, that really mattered. Suddenly, it's consultation and public opinion. You could say, couldn't you, that, you know, if you said to somebody, well, do you want cheaper fares? They go, yes, I want them free, thank you very much. That would be the response. It's ludicrous to think that would be a consideration. It doesn't take into cost indexes, does it? But here with Bank Junction, I think it's extreme. And I think the calculation was that the buses would save about 8 seconds if, lose 8 seconds if taxis was allowed through. And I think this monopolisation of Bank Junction and use the traffic modelling statistics specifically to Bank Junction and not take into account the peripheral routes, I think is a problem. And we should actually say, this has affected my ability to earn a living, my democratic right to earn a living and feed my family. They are making taxes more and more inefficient by the policies they're putting in place. I'll finish with this before we come back to it as a discussion point. But Tottenham Court Road is a case in point here and desperately needs to be reviewed. because it was done at a time when there was a very shrouded, secretive administration in City Hall, and you could not at all differentiate between private hire and taxis. When you collated the information, there was all shoved together in the one bag, and the safest transport option in London, which is the licensed taxi driver, was now deemed as the unsafest because it was lumped together with rideshare. Now, that is a travesty of justice, an absolute travesty of justice. And Camden did exhaust looking to see if they could differentiate between the two. They did look into it and couldn't do it. Now, we're going back a few years when this traffic modelling or this traffic order, which is what they have in Bang Junction, but the traffic order was put in place. It needs to be reviewed, doesn't it? Because now those statistics, even though, they're difficult to get, but when they're published, you can actually separate them, and rightly so. But it shows that taxis are incredibly safe form of transport, the safest transport option in London. So why should we be restricted outside on Tottenham Court Road when you've got the new Network Rail going in? We need to be competitive to that rail, not excluded from an area where people would alight and use us. That is anti-competitive, shouldn't be allowed, and we should be having a scream up about it, shouldn't we? But we'll be back after this.
I'm gonna put this dream
Okay, we're back on. Second half of the show, we've got Phil Ferrigno and Kevin Morley. They were talking about the LEVC taxi. This is another contentious issue which divides the trade in it, and there's a large demographic in the trade that is rejecting it. But, and this is my foreboding, and it's something we should think about, I'm not here to make people's decisions for them, but I think they should consider at least one of them that is coming out, because we're all going to end up driving people carriers or driving Priuses at worst, aren't we, as taxis, because I cannot see anybody else coming into the market. Who will come into the market to think, that's a lucrative market, that's a viable market even, I'll go into it, if the purpose-built vehicle, the prescribed vehicle, the easily identifiable vehicle is rejected by us? Who will come into that market? I mean, the idea is boycott it and they'll drop the price dramatically. I don't know whether that's the case, because there's other countries buying up these taxis. They are not restricting themselves to London. So I think they will just look at the international market. So I think we've got to be very careful about boycotting en masse. But I'm not saying kind of do what I say. It's something to consider, because I think a lot of the times when I was doing the costing of it and adding it up over the period, the financial period, then it comes out possibly a little bit less than what you would be paying now for a new TX. So I think that's got to be considered, because we don't look at it that way. And I know there's issues about the battery and the health of the battery. And I think these are things that need to be looked into. But to rule it out, I think, does us a bit of a disservice. I think we've got to consider finance. And there is implications there with the current state of the market. And TfL has a responsibility there, because they dictate cost indexes, don't they? And also, they're saying this prescribed vehicle is the one we must use in order for me and you to work as a taxi driver. Because I cannot work as a taxi driver any other way without having a prescribed vehicle that TfL approves. So it has to meet the conditions of fitness. You have to meet the required standard necessary to work as a taxi driver. TfL, there's an onus of responsibility on TfL to make that viable. And we all know what it is, don't we? Now, that's a whole other show in itself, because reinstate the two-tier system, you sort out the problems associated with mass oversaturation in the market, don't you? But like I said, I think we talked about that last week, and it is a massive subject, but that's the problem. Enforce the law as it stands, enforce the two-tier system, applying for hire, it'd help if that was defined in law, that would sort out all the peripheral issues. But we'll be joined by Phil Ferrigno, who wants to talk about the electric vehicle, because he quite likes it and might be getting one. And Kevin Morley, who's gone for the LPG. Now, the LPG's been on the market for quite a while, but it's come to the fore because it is an option, at least, to the electric vehicle. It does mean that in time, I'm sure, if everything has to be a zero emissions capable, only capable at the moment, then that will become redundant as well. At the moment, it's an option and adds 5 years to your cab. If it's completed, the work is completed before its plate runs out, you've got an extra 5 years. That might suit a lot of people coming out of the trade, or know you're going to come out of the trade in, say, 5 years if you're an older boy. And because I can't see them running to the cost of the LEVC. But this might be an option. Might be an option for everybody. So Kevin Morley will be talking about that. But Phil, and Phil is an unassuming figure. Phil is, not many people know who he is. But he is one of the founder members of Taxi App. So we're very grateful to Phil there, plays a significant part in the running of Taxi App as well. And so he'll be joining us, and he's very much into the vehicle. He has the same foreboding as everybody else, but he's very much into the electric vehicle. Something went out, well, I will put it on London Taxi Radio today. When this goes out, it'll already be out. But I did have a ride in the back of one, only because I was in GSS car park and someone pulled up next to me in their LEVC vehicle, and we happened to be recording stuff, and we jumped in the back and went round to the entrance of GSS. So that was, and it cost £3.20. No, we paid on card. That's it. You're Myrna Bourne's in the studio now. Myrna, you're a advocate of cards, aren't you? You love taking a credit card, don't you, as payment?
I do.
You do? Yes. What's your favourite one? The one that gives you lots of tips?
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, what sort of a question this is?
I mean, this is. But
I love tips.
Yes, we love tips. I mean, come on.
Give me a couple of tips.
On credit cards, just quickly, because it's something that seems to have gone by the wayside a little bit. Do you think it's benefited the trade at all?
Oh, I think it's benefited the trade tremendously. I'll be honest with you. When it wasn't compulsory in the taxes, I was really shocked how many drivers was refusing actually having a card payments and having a cash sign only in their cabs. And, you know, you talk to the people in the cabs, and I think it was lots of people that at the time didn't use us. I had a gentleman in my cab that actually said to me that if he doesn't think he has sufficient funds, he wouldn't jump in the cab because he wasn't sure if the cab driver obviously gonna have a machine fitted in. And I can tell you, my son, he doesn't carry any cash around. You know, everything with him is on the card.
And that is the new generation, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And even when I say to him, you know, can you pay something for me on the card, I give you a cash, I can see he's just rolling his eyes around.
It's just a funny thing, though, isn't it? Because when I do contactless and he asks me, you know, tip option, it defeats the purpose of contactless. And it seems like you're holding people up.
Yes.
Even that, what might take 10 seconds, it seems like you're now inconveniencing people. It's like, that's it. They want it done there and then. And if your credit card reader doesn't kick into action within 3 seconds, it's a bit like everything's falling apart. It's really, it's a bizarre world we are living in.
Yeah, everything has to be instant. And if it's not instant, people get upset.
This is the whole thing with Uber, isn't it? I mean, I know the nanosecond, which TfL said, even if it's a nanosecond, it's a pre-book. It was never about time. Time would be engineered because there's no mention of time. A pre-book isn't legal terminology. But it does seem like Uber is instant, no doubt about it. And, you know, 2-3 minutes, they can't wait for their minicab longer than 2 or 3 minutes anymore.
I know.
What do we come to when we haven't got the attention span or just to be relaxed enough to say, you know what, I can pre-book this and wait a little bit longer? I find it madness that we get impatient because our minicab doesn't turn up in 2 minutes.
I know, and it should be 10 minutes delay.
The thing is that there is a on that subject, because I came around Victoria. Somebody said to me, Victoria, there's people needing cabs. Now, obviously, there was a late training because it was very late, and I wasn't expecting to be coming out the back end of Victoria. So I went around there, and there was people standing there, and there was some on their phones, and some were hailing cabs as they went by. Cabs were intermittent. There wasn't one after another, but there was coming round. And they get in. I had to go back round after about 10 minutes because I only went down to somewhere by Lambeth Bridge, came back, same people standing there on the phones. So when it comes to inconvenience, they were the ones inconvenienced, standing on their phone, waiting for Uber to turn up.
Yes, but they think that that's very inconvenient. This is the society that we're turning in.
Well,
do you understand?
They do think that's convenient, but I think they not considering us as an option. I don't think it's rejection as such. It's just it's a generation that hasn't really taken black cabs. They've booked minicabs because that's what they've done. And so they haven't really stood on the street and hailed a black cab. But as far as, because they were sold on the back of convenience.
Yes.
They were sold on the back of efficiency. And we all know that's, you know, that's not true. But they were sold on the back of a lot of lies as well on that matter. But they were sold very much that this is convenient for you. Evidently, it's not, is it? Because they were waiting 10 minutes later. After I went to Lambeth Bridge and come back and the same people was waiting there. They could have been waiting for the two. They could have been waiting for the two that were facing the wrong way on the one-way section of Vauxhall Bridge Road. they could have been waiting for them, which was never going to turn up, incidentally. So, I mean, that's something to think about. So when we hear about this is, it's about convenience, it's about not schlepping down to the high street to get your taxi, you don't have to schlep down to the high street, you know. Cabs, taxis, licensed taxis can come and pick you up where you are. It's not about schlepping down, but that's about people being aware that they can actually utilize taxis.
I know,
in that
but
way.
This is, you know, when you said like people kind of can't see us anymore. And I tell you what, I think that this is an excellent PR of Uber. Oh. I think that they have one of the best. If I was running for the prime minister, I think I would have.
Well, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. But I don't think, I tell you what, it's even more basic than that. It's not having a good PR machine. It's having money.
Yeah, exactly.
Because what they did was they didn't build growth like a company has to. They bought growth.
Yes.
They had billions to be able to smash through incumbent trades. You know, trades that were bolted into this time period, into a contemporary period. They were able to smash through that with money. So it was whoever, and it still is, well, it's changed somewhat, but it was about whoever had the
it's
most
true.
Staying power.
And I never actually thought of that. And it's everything is now, it's not building the business, it's actually investors putting money.
It's investors buying it, buying
exactly.
the business. And that's what they did. I mean, when you have 3.5 billion from countries with gross human atrocity ethics records, then, you know, and then they use that money to subsidize fares, so
yes.
anti-competitive, because they subsidize predatory pricing, fixed pricing usually known as,
absolutely.
To subsidize fares, to break the back of incumbent markets.
And
that's
this
what
is this predatory pricing, this is what really gets to me, and this is, I have a couple of heated arguments no discussions.
Really? That's
no.
Well, you know, her love talk is heated
discussions.
Arguments. That's what it is.
Yes.
Passion is heated arguments.
You know, because when people always go to you, people always come up with this argument, oh, do you know, until you cheaper, until you this, and they don't even realize that the 40%, I think 40% of the fares are subsidized by investors.
Well, the Times came up with a, you know, they did a breakdown in you know, the outgoings, ingoings,
yes.
outgoings, and they did come up with up to 60%, in fact. I mean,
yes.
that's a huge subsidy, and actually puts them more expensive than us. So they're not an efficient system, and certainly the drivers aren't seeing much to the benefit of that subsidy.
Yeah, that's actually, for me, that's the worst part, you know, the way they treat their workers. And I would always say to the people, you know, when they complain about us, slowly this gig economy is going to knock on your door as well. And this is why people should actually...
Yes, and they can't see that. I think
no.
that is something that people can't see until it's in your face. The cab trade had trouble seeing, you know, that they might be affected by kind of a subsidized, mm-hmm. Funded kind of agency, some kind of market that comes in and says, right, we're going to be state assisted, because that's what they was, state assisted, and to a degree they are still state assisted because they are illegal, and until one of our government bodies decides that the court is the only place that this can be decided, that's how it is. They can't just make the decision on the way. They can't just say, okay, well, yeah, we'll just forget about that bit. They cannot minimise this. And if it isn't taken into consideration through the relicensing, just their impropriety or the being not fit and proper is taken into consideration and not the illegality of their operation, then it will remain. This will be a problem until it finds its way to the court.
And the worst thing is, you know, what you said, and to be perfectly honest, I didn't, not that I didn't realize, you don't think about things. And you, when you said...
Oh, no, you don't think about things.
Okay, so. I don't.
It's quite a nice place to be. Go on.
I know. You know, I've got my glazed look now. You know, when you said now they're actually working without a license, so it's costing them no money. This is what is the most shocking thing now.
Well, I assume, yeah. I mean, it is. It's shocking that any appeal system, if somebody or something or a company, collective, whatever it is considered not fit or proper, and it's quite serious allegations, then they shouldn't be in operation.
I know, and they kind of be rewarded, you
yes.
know. Oh, now you don't have to pay your license.
Yeah, no, you're right. And the thing is, yes, they're being rewarded. And the thing is, there is an option there to... mitigating circumstances, they could stop them from operating. And I think that's the case. We're going into a big area here, which I wasn't going to go into. But so, what's happened with you this week? What's been the most important thing? What's jumped out? Because I know you've been busy out working, haven't you? Every day you've been there. Crack of dawn, early start, late finish, you know, because it's been pretty tough.
Okay.
Was it half a day you did this week, man?
I had a little lapsus this week.
Really? Yeah, okay. Nothing to do with snaps or anything like that.
But no, it was red wine.
So what's jumped out to you this week?
Oh, you put me on the spot again.
There you
One
go.
More time again. You should have warned me so I could have sit at home. I could have been all night thinking what have jumped up this week. Nothing.
How about that? That's the end of
How
the show.
No,
folks, I'll see you sometime next week. But what do you think? I mean, a big thing, because it's the first time, it's made history, first time cab driver has been ruled against disability act.
Yes.
You know, because of he is perceived, and the judge saw right to say he was discriminating against this passenger because she was disabled, and it takes longer to assist her into the cab, and he shouldn't have put the meter on until there was in the cab. Insurance companies seem to contradict that. Now, they wasn't aware of this situation, so it was there was a bit hijacked. But they did say, well, it's the verbal agreement, and the confirmation is the meter, and that's when insurance will kick in. And that seems to make sense, which suggests that he was right to do so. With that in mind,
I understand, like, technically. Technically, it was right, but was it morally right? That's the question now.
Morally,
you know?
Right, and I don't know whether morals are a case in point in the court of law.
Of course not. Sorry, I'm not talking about that.
But yeah, there is a moralistic angle here. But the LTDA did say that they was going to appeal it, and I just wonder on what grounds would it be appealed. It's just an interesting one, because you can't look to you can't look to our book for it. You have to look to the Act, don't you? And it was an Act that was brought in. It was brought in 2010. It was enabled in 2017. But it did say you couldn't charge them more. Now, if he has put the meter on, knowing that he's got, especially a veto, I don't know whether it was. I mean, that's just an assumption. But it does take longer, because you've got to manually get the ramps out the back, put them in place, and then, assist the person in. Now, that could take quite a significant, especially if you're on rate 3 or something,
and
could take a significantly
I mean,
longer.
I had a case once. It wasn't a disabled person, but I had a case outside Aldwych One. I think they had like about 20 suitcases. So what do you do? I personally wouldn't put a meter on, you know, but it took us about 10 minutes to put those suitcases in, to put them out.
And there is a difference, isn't there? Because that is your time.
Yes.
They have chosen to take 20 suitcases with bodies in. They've always so
Oh,
heavy.
I know. I think it was a funny smell out of know.
Okay. Well, depends what you're into. But, I mean, it is different. The other person, they can choose not to take that many cases. And the disabled person can't make that choice.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know we don't have a brilliant rep with the disabled organisations, but we are, all being said, we are the only fleet that is 100% wheelchair accessible. And you could say Uber's encroaching, or the app companies that utilise private hire are encroaching on the instant hire market, but they don't meet that condition of fitness where they don't offer that facility. They might, I think it's something like 10 cars or something to say they've got assist cars. But this is a case in point where we offer 100% wheelchair accessible vehicles. They don't, and they're encroaching on that instant hire market. And I think that's where it kind of, the resentment, if any, lies. Resentment hasn't kicked in yet. It's still vibrant. It's venomous anger.
Yes.
It's just incandescent, I think the word is. So there is that. And I don't know any cabbie that would do it, maybe out of just instinct, but he proceeded to have the argument with the person. So I think he argued the case for the meter being on. So I would dearly like to know if somebody knows what the score is there, because I haven't heard
too
much. Like I said, McNamara, they said they was going to appeal it. Another thing the LTDA have said, McNamara was good on LBC yesterday. He was on Eddie Nestor's drive time.
I didn't know.
Yeah, it kept on for quite a prolonged period of time, and so can get more the longer you're on, of course, the more you can mess up. He doesn't generally mess up. Sometimes I think the case he's arguing is there's another case to be argued. And it is interesting, because he argued, a lot of us have said stop saying cheap, haven't we? In the industry, we've said stop, keep saying cheap, because that's all people hear.
I know, and this is all they want.
That's all they that's all they hear, isn't it? Joel, they're cheap, I get that. Now, he was quite pointed in saying that yesterday. Now, his whole argument was good. But when asked, well, why do they use them? You can't, it was all this, what's been charged against, the 21 points TfL's got, which all are in and of themselves relevant to their licence being refused. Mm. But when he said, well, why do people use them? Because they're cheap. And he must have said this six times, because they're cheap. And then give the moralistic arguments why you shouldn't use them. Not paying tax, corporation tax, domiciling themselves in Holland and all that. Those are great arguments. But I don't think you win the argument with your moralistic case.
No, you don't.
Because people still hear cheap.
I know.
And so I just think, I mean, he has a point. Sorry, he has a point, and this is what I think, because he has a point, because you can't argue that they owe corporation tax, hence they'd be in profit, wouldn't they? And then argue that they're losing money hand over fist, what, $3.5 billion last year, and the drivers are not staying on, so only one in five drivers choose to renew their private hire driver's license to work for Uber. So the thing is, you can't argue that they're $3.5 billion in the red, so it's not a sustainable product. So you could say, well, they're cheap. Well, yes, but it's not sustainable because we're subsidising fares. Mm-hmm. And then argue that they're not paying corporation tax because it'd be one or the other. So I think it's chosen the corporation tax. That's a big issue to say, look, they're stealing. They're stealing, robbing off the country, aren't they?
They are.
They're robbing infrastructure, using infrastructure, not paying any money towards it, not paying any corporation tax. They're robbing off our national emergency services. But then you can't argue, can you, like I said, that, well, they've got no money. And so it's not a sustainable product. This cannot be sustained being cheap. So he said it six times. Now, we've tried to say, don't say cheap. So what do you think about that? That's an interesting thing. What would you think? Because you know what I'm like when it says cheap. I say, well, don't say cheap, because they're not always cheap for that matter. And recently, when it's gone up to like 1.5, they've been comparable. And so I think, what would you say? I think you've got to hear it, because it is good. And the one thing, Stephen Mackey is good. God forbid he's lost out of the LTDA, because there's no one that could step into his shoes. And the LTDA are always the ones that are approached to do any kind of marketing or TV appeals. They are the people they go to for the media. So it is a good argument. So you'll have to listen to it in its entirety. We'll post it. I think I've already posted it. Mm-hmm. Listen to it in its entirety. And in context, you've got to make that decision. But I think whenever you hear cheap, I always want to jump on it somewhat. Well, pulling faces works on radio.
I'm lost for words.
Lost for words.
No, listen, we all know, what the score with Uber is and why people use them or why people don't use them. You know, we can always come from, like you said, moralistic stand, but I don't think that people really care about it anymore. And this is travesty. You know, and lots of people really, I don't think that lots of people are really well informed still, unfortunately, about the situation that is happening in our industry. So they're thinking that we are just throwing our toys out of the pram.
That's right. I'm expecting good news about Bank Junction. I'll tell you one thing. There's a couple of arguments going on at the moment that seem to go below the radar of our awareness. And one is an ongoing dispute with Bank Junction, of course. The other one is Tavistock Place. Oh. Now, I can only see that they would want to put Tavistock Place, keep it in the place as it is now, how it works now, with they've got a traffic order on it, with the implementation of pedestrianisation of Tottenham Court Road. Which, of course, they're also, so that's going to be cyclists and buses. Gower Street is also going to be cyclists and buses and everything else. So you would have thought if they were going to pedestrianise one or put, quite severe restrictions in, severe from our perspective, then they would have made it Gower Street, because that's a more of a through route as opposed to a street that has furniture shops, and you might go in and buy furniture and need transport. Now, I know that there's going to be strategic ranks put in place. That's what we are told anyway. That doesn't always manifest. I don't think the one at Bank Junction is strategic, the one at the top of Prince's Street. It faces the wrong way. But I think, apparently they're going to be quite a few. And it is only till 7 p.m. That isn't an argument, is it? Because I think we shouldn't have any restriction on taxis at all. If buses and cyclists have a through route, we should always categorically have a through route as well. But that needs to be revisited. But kind of below the radar is a really good report by the RMT on Tavistock Place. There's the ex-Mayfair mob member, Raymond.
Oh, Ray. Our Ray.
Raymond. And Kevin Walkbar. Now, Kevin Walkbar is very much behind the scenes there. Mm-hmm. But they do some great work. Now, a lot of this, they're not like me. They're not shouting all the time, top of their heads, trying to draw some attention to what's going on. But people like Ray, people like Kevin behind the scenes, they are the people that should be running the trade. Up there running the trade. And I know you've got the LCDC, you've got a fantastic committee there. Members of the real LTDA, great lads.
Yes.
Kind of, you could say, younger, not always younger, but younger-minded, coming through, working cab drivers, understanding the profession, understanding what it's like there out on the street, putting in some fantastic work. And the work if you look on the website or on their Twitter feed, you'll come across it, is the work they've done on Tavistock Place. And it is absolutely fantastic. But again, I think they're going to suffer from the idea that they don't do traffic modelling outside of the area.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest problem.
That the traffic modelling has been done on. Yeah, it is a big problem.
And if you look, every decision that has been made in the traffic, you know, in the infrastructure of London, every decision has been made from the Transport for London for worse, for the traffic basically be stationary. It's unbelievable. It's like what you said actually once. They sit in this office. I sometimes wonder, are they on drugs? Do they drink as much as I do, but they can't really handle the drink like I can?
I think
after two bottles of wine, I would have structured London better than what they're doing in Transport for London.
Yes, you're right. And if you was an alien, right?
Yes.
And you came to Earth,
uh-huh.
You never designed the road network like they've designed it, would you?
You never would.
In fact, you'd sack them all, wouldn't you?
On the spot.
Yes. Because you wouldn't employ the people who've done it, would you?
No, you wouldn't.
It's absolutely shocking.
It's shocking. It is shocking.
But I'm going to touch on one last point before we go to Philip Ferrigno and Kevin Morley to discuss the LEVC vehicle and the LPG vehicle. We're going to go on to a point that I was invited. I was privileged to be invited to the Arts Club. A nice venue, isn't it? The Arts Club. A bit like Gaucho Club.
Oh, yes.
Like
this is when it was all suited and booted.
It's very nice. Yeah, it's very nice. It's a bit eyebrow for me. The thing is, I don't mind. I will enter into any conversation or any debate of any kind with whoever. And I don't really give too much reverence to class. Okay. But when I've got to put a suit on, oh, my goodness, it feels like I've got a noose around my neck. I feel like I will do it because it's about appropriation, isn't it? Being appropriate.
But he looks very handsome in his suit.
Thank you very much. And out the suit.
And out of the suit.
Don't restrict me. It's restricted. So I went to the Arts Club. It didn't matter where it was, really. There was an invite. It was a transport. It was an audience with about transport. But there was big, big players on stage here. You've got a random little audience, but big players. It was hosted by Nick Ferrari to start with. Now, there was a wage bill going down there. I'm not sure who was paying for this. It must be the Arts Club. But they must have requested something, a transport, an audience with the transport people. Because next to him, you got Steve McNamara. Next to him, you got Jenny Jones. Next to her, you got, and his name evades me, but he's an architect within TfL. And although he's more unassuming, he is a very big player in TfL. And next to him, you got Peter Hendy. Peter Hendy, of all people. Two heads Peter Hendy. You know, it's a different Uber now than what it was when I licensed it. No, it's exactly the same Uber, Peter. Exactly the same. And you should have seen that. I remember him saying distinctly, and if I paraphrase, it's only very slightly, but I remember him saying it wasn't his job to care about the cab trade. It was his job to care about the public. Well, I wonder if you think the same.
I don't think he's done a really good job.
Well, he did. No, he didn't care about the public. He was under pressure from government, wasn't he? And he won't admit it. But now they're a completely different company, aren't they? No, they're not. Exactly the same. I'll tell you why they're exactly the same. Because no provision of any kind or no condition or anything at all has been put in place to make them any different. So that's why they're no different. But you've got a stage of big players here. Mm-hmm. And you just think, random little audience. Come on, look at all you lot. Of course, we'd have liked all to get questions in. It was very limited. Three questions didn't get to us. I even stood by the door for about 45 minutes after hoping to catch them going out. Oh, Mike Brown in the middle, by the way. That's a faux pas. To miss out the Commissioner of Transport, Mike Brown was there. This is a stage full of big players. None of them was going to challenge each other to the degree that they will feel challenged. Mild challenges, which they must have batted off 100 times. But the significant thing of it, because they could all talk okay. And Steve McNamara talked about congestion and pop-up, you know, poles for the cycle superhighway, which has a point. And he talks
quite
well.
Actually, I thought it was quite a good idea.
Well, the thing is, it should have been trialled anyway, shouldn't it? It should have been trialled with cones, at least.
Yes.
But the permanent infrastructure went in. But nevertheless, they were given 5 minutes by Nick Ferrari after he'd phoned in his usual jokes. for them to say who they was and what they were there for. Not one of them mentioned taxes. Not one of them. Not even Steve McNamara in their opening speech. Not one of them.
You say that, and you know what? It struck me when you said if people would come out of the out of that meeting, you know, they would think, oh, it was a quite good meeting. Probably yeah. I would, because I don't pay attention to the details. But I was actually amazed how you spotted it and what you actually said.
I mean, it all came across pally and harmonious. Yes. Chris Jennings, great advocate for the trade, who's doing some brilliant work on holding a lot of these companies to account, he managed to fire a question. So they knew they got cabbies in the audience. No one approached us at the end because they did step off the stage, but seemed to exit very quickly because there was no one going to get challenged here. Let me tell you, no one. And I wish I'd just shouted out, but then you become a thug, don't you? And it was probably worth.
You don't want to be escorted out
again. I have been. I was escorted out of Haringey. That was the Haringey one, I think. The Haringey one is under Boris Johnson's tutelage. You know what? Just because he wouldn't listen. You wouldn't listen, for goodness sake. That's a bit like, you know.
I experience that sort of rage with you on the daily basis. Oh. So I know. Come I'm on. Shaking Come as on. We speak.
I was Haringey one. I think it was the Haringey anyway, one. That privilege. But, so he got in a question about, applying for hire or just the two-tier system. Because what the impression I got was everybody loves taxis. And none of them was – taxis did not feature, categorically did not feature here. There was in response to – you had a lovely old dear towards the front. We was at the back. Towards the front, say, I love my black cabs. And so the whole stage was going to come out to say, yes, we love black cabs as well. So they all love black cabs.
And that's about it.
Yes, exactly. It's all lip service. They're doing nothing about it. They all hated Uber, all of them, but – that was obviously the model of the future.
But they all accommodated, exactly.
It was the model of the future. And that's the impression I got. And it's very late in the day, isn't it? And we're running out of time, but it's very late in the day. But with that in mind, what do we need to do about it? The architect, incidentally, was the only one that said anything interesting. And he said, because about 2 years, he didn't say this, but I'll just precursor it. 2 years ago, I thought buses are going to get disrupted. And I think we're going down the wrong line when we think, oh, they're taking away all money off mass transport. They're taking money off the buses. That's why they wouldn't want them. I actually think they want to dismantle this rigid bus system, you know, stopping, starting, timed buses, prescribed routes, where that just causes immeasurable congestion. So I think they're not that keen. They'd like to disband that or break that up somewhat. And I think that would get disrupted. And I think we were saying this 2 years ago. And it looks like they are now. But the architect said, well, that's what we need, a more fluid transport system. He then went on to say, and the only option that does provide that under the TfL banner is the black cab. And he went, that's interesting, isn't it? And I thought, that is interesting. He didn't go on. I didn't know whether he's privileged to any other information or whether that's where it ended. Because it is interesting that that's the system one. The black cab is the system that would work better, has that fluidity. Diversify, to be able to diversify within a split second. If there's a roadworks there, you're able to diversify. Instead of blocking it up because you've got to reprogram your sat-nav, you can diversify in a second. And I think that's the significant benefit of the knowledge. Safety. Yeah. And the ability to be efficient once the journey starts.
Yeah, but this is where people underestimate the knowledge. I said this on a couple of occasions, and they think that we don't need knowledge anymore. But the London is, we know, so complex that, yes, this is the one thing that you do need. Knowledge with technology, it's a wonderful thing.
Well, it's yeah.
Wonderful.
It's self-evident that the knowledge works because the... I'm told accidents that are happening with rideshare and Uber drivers. That's it. It's self-evident. I've never seen so many accidents. So there you go. This is working on demand. The consequences of working on demand. We're going back to everything, another show again when we start talking about that. Again, we revert back to the same thing. But it was an interesting meeting, to say the least. Well, it wasn't a meeting. It was just a panel of big hitters with a random audience of about 20 people. It was odd to say the least, but it was the kind of the arts club, you see. It was the kind of audience they would love. Nobody's going to really shout out like me. I was dying to.
I wish you asked the question. Question.
The question's to be asked, and there's a whole regulatory framework.
And then answer your own question, because you'd be good at it as well.
Well, how about that? Well, I'm sure they have the answers as well. It's just they're not saying what they are, and that's the issue. Things to think about. We're going to catch up with... I told you, you get to hear Phil Ferrigno. Taxi, I'm very familiar and with Phil, aren't we? Lovely fella. And very unassuming. He's not
Kevin
out there
Morley.
In people's... He's not out there in people's faces. And Kevin Morley, who's got the LPG vehicle. But yeah, so that's where we're headed. I'll be back with you after that to round up what's going on and see what's coming up next week. How about you, Mona? Any final things?
That's it.
You working
I'm
today?
Done. Of working? Course I am.
You're working?
Yes. As soon as we finish.
In the cab?
I'm in the cab.
Oh, George.
In the cab.
Come on.
He's just going to criticise me.
No, it's a Tuesday and after all. Anyway, I'll speak to you after this.
London Taxi Radio. Get involved. London Taxi Radio. The station for taxi drivers throughout the UK.
There's a lot of talk at the moment about the electric vehicle, and that is an intermediary, isn't it? Because the end game, as we know, will be automation. I don't know how far we're away from automation, but before we get there, we're going electric. And it seems like most people are taking it up. Well, there's more on the road than what I thought. I'm joined by Kevin Morley. Right. He's helping hand at Taxi App, doing a great job. You're
okay. Right, Kevin? Yeah, I'm fine.
And I'm joined by the very unassuming Phil Ferrigno, the founder of Taxi App. How about that? First time on LTR, I think. Is it, Phil?
First time for me.
How about that? A lot of you might not know who Phil is because he is quite unassuming, but profoundly part of the birth of Taxi App. So we're very grateful to him. The electric vehicle, Phil, I know you talk a lot about it. What do you think is the what would you say is the tempting thing? If you was going to go for it, what would you say would be the thing that says, yes, that's what I'm going to go for?
I think it's many things. I don't think it's one particular thing. I think you've got to look at the brand. You've got to look at the actual technical side of the vehicle and what we're coming from and what we're going into. So I think it's an exciting time. To start with the brand, I think, you know, we've had a lot of negative, you know, dinosaurs and the rest of it that you keep on hearing. And I think part of changing people's perception is to move forward with new technology. Mm. And it's not the first time. Actually, the first electric cabs in London were actually in 1897, believe it or not.
Can I have one of them? How much would that cost?
You get a free start on Handle, will
you? Yeah, you did. But no, actually, it was a guy in Lambeth. But funny, it was quite funny if you actually read a little bit about it. Is the drivers at the time weren't particularly favourable vehicles. They were actually called a Hummingbird. He went bankrupt after a couple of years because it did get a lot of bad press. But, you know, it shows that the cab trade has always been at the front of technology. And I think that's the future for us. I think changing your image would be going with these newer vehicles.
Well, it's not just, I mean, it's not so much changing the image to look at. I think it looks great. I think the idea of it was, oh, I don't know about this. It's a bit boxy. It's a bit big. But now I see it, I think, do you know what? That looks really nice. And talking to the drivers that have bought one or buying one, they all rave about them, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think the mileage is a little bit, you know, the 80 miles, you're not seeing that. I think average, to be fair, is probably between 50 and 65.
Yeah.
That's the average we're seeing. There is a slight difference in driving style. You have to, like, you know, with any technology, you've got to adapt for it. But overall, I think there is a saving there compared to the outgoing Euro 6s. You know, I've done the maths on the average cab driver, average mileage. It there's not a massive saving over five years. You sort of save from then on, but I don't think it costs you any more when you look at the savings on the fuel side.
I think Ascot was looking at, because just cover price quickly, because get that out of the way, because we've gone so long where they don't mention the price, and so you're all guessing.
Yeah.
But then Ascot was doing something like 175 a week, which is what we usually pay, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're buying over 5 years, that's really what you could expect, wasn't it? And then if you wanted to make the balloon payment, because there's all that, isn't there, to consider, it's an extra £73 a week. So you're looking at something like £232.40, and then you've got your cost on top of that.
Yeah.
But where is the saving? So if I paid that, and I went to Ascot, and I'm not saying Ascot in any way, but they're the ones that have come up with this deal,
sure,
and a provision to put that £70 a week away.
Sure.
If I went to them and said, yes, I can go with £240, say, and with considering my costs on top, what's the saving?
Okay, well, what I would say is, let's say an average 17-16 plate Euro 6 is about £260-£270 a week. And you're getting the top of the range LEVC for £188, put your insurance on top. There's not much difference. Mm. So, you know, I think you've got to look at the biggest running cost of all of us actually is our fuel. I mean, I spent personally, about £33,000 in fuel, you know, over 5-6 years. So when you start looking at your fuel savings or how much you're spending, it really does, you know, there is a saving there to be made.
And charging wise, I mean, well, give us a rundown on the charging. I know there's a short span time, a quick charge, and then there's one that you're supposed to do overnight. So how would that work? And what's the inconvenience of both?
So if you read a lot of posts online about electric vehicles, what you very, very fast you come aware of is that you need to be able to charge when you're not doing anything, you know, when you're parking, when you're going for shopping. For a cab driver, obviously, it's downtime. So you don't want to lose that saving by stopping just to stop to charge. You know, when you're grabbing something to eat, that's when you should charge it. So you're actually not losing any time at all. Obviously, it's not for everyone. There is more charge points. But if you can charge at night and you do stop for lunch down at the Astral or wherever it may be, and you can charge them for another half an hour, 20 minutes, you can actually not use the generator at all. Use only battery. You haven't actually lost any time whatsoever. So actually you're saving time compared to going to the petrol station.
Yeah, and how much, say, for half an hour would that be?
Okay, so rapid chargers, 50 kilowatt, means it charges 50 kilowatts per hour. The battery in the LEVC is 31 kilowatts.
Right.
So you're talking about 45 minutes. That's on a rapid charger. Then you have a fast charger, 22 kilowatts an hour. Then you have 7 kilowatts, which is about 4 hours. That's your average one on the street. So 7 kilowatts is your average post you see stuck up. And that's about four and a half hours. If you do it on a 3-pin plug, you're talking 10 to 11 hours.
At home. Yeah. And what's the cost on, say, that 10 to 11 hours?
Okay, so 10 to 11 hours, which would be your home charger, you can get sort of round about 7 to 9 pence per kilowatt. So now you can work it out. So 7 to 9 pence per kilowatt, you got about 30 kilowatts to charge. So you're probably talking about, you know, £2.50, £3.
I mean, that's more than what I used to put in my C90 on. Just about right, about the same, wasn't it? That's incredible. So that's a real saving. Now, the metro's pending, isn't it? I mean, have they rolled that out yet? I know that they've got it back up and running, haven't they?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the company who's going to be actually assembling the vehicle is a company called CADCAM.
Yeah.
They specialised in a lot of high sort of quality vehicles, Range Rovers, Lotuses and stuff like that. So they seem very capable. On a large scale, it's still yet to be seen. They're still, I believe, building their new factory or locating one to build in Coventry. But yeah, the investment's there. It seems like it's a good company.
I don't like the look so much. Have you seen the look?
It looks a bit...
When they did things that were like battery-like in fiction? It's a bit like that, isn't it? They kind of model it on...
The Metro.
Yeah, the Metro. It seems a bit squarer. But isn't that supposed to be real new technology? Isn't that supposed to be self-generating? Or doesn't that recharge the battery itself?
Yeah, well, that actually charges the battery. But the thing is, so if we look at... I don't believe that's the right way to go forward.
Okay.
And I'll give you the reason for that. So the reason that I don't...
Because a lot of people will go, well, that is the way forward, isn't it? That's self-charging.
Sure,
that's
sure.
Self-sustainable.
So you've got to look at, obviously, one of the biggest things we're moving to this new technology is cost. So to actually charge your batteries via a generator is a lot more expensive than what it is to actually plug in. So we don't actually really want people to be charging all the time off a generator because it means, obviously, there's emissions coming out all the time. And it costs more, So obviously LEVC, it doesn't charge the battery per se. It does charge it because it maintains it.
Yeah, it maintains it.
So really on 5% of charge, it can go the same distance using the generator as if he was charging it.
Isn't the concern with that drivers will end up running it off the tank just to say, there aren't the charge points around at the moment.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good point. I think... until the infrastructure reaches there, this was a good intermediary because I don't think the batteries and the time it takes and the rest of it, I don't think full batteries for a working cab driver is the technology is 100% there yet. So I think the range extender gives you hopefully half, 70% of your shift on a battery, and then you just switch over to generator. But if you can stop and charge, you should be able to do a full shift solely on the battery.
The concern about the battery, now I know nobody's got answers for this, but should there be a concern there? Is it legitimate?
Going on data, it shouldn't be. Tesla obviously have been leading the way the last few years on battery technology. Tests have been conducted, and Tesla's, after sort of 10 years, are sort of down to 92% efficiency. So, they've only lost 8%. Right. So it does seem batteries actually are quite resistant.
And that's guaranteed, isn't it, the battery for 5 years? But you're looking at $5,000 for to replace one of those batteries as well, aren't you?
Well, I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I mean, lots of people have asked LEVC about the price. What I would say to you about the price, it's a little bit irrelevant to sort of get the price now because as manufacturing ramps up, the cost of that battery in 5 years, 10 years is probably going to be 30% less.
And what's the chance? I mean, I don't know much about this. I don't know about you, Kevin, but what's the chance of this being dated very quickly, this technology in this cab?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, the range extender part of it could be dated because as battery technology improves, and obviously the more money that goes into these vehicles, the technology will advance. So there is a possibility of that, but then we also have the possibility that you can remove those batteries and hopefully upgrade them and replace them. Again, cost is we don't know.
But still, you have to weight up a savings as well, don't you?
Yeah.
You have to weight up like
that.
I'll
be honest with you, technology is a funny one because you get some people who like to wait a few years. The problem is you can't wait for technology because in a few years you'll say, well, I'll wait for the next one and the next one. So you really have to decide, you know, if it's for you, can it work for you? I mean, bottom line is it's a working vehicle to make you money.
Yeah.
So what I would say to anyone is work your costs out, obviously include the fuel, you know, and make your own minds up. It's not for everyone. I don't think at this particular time it's not for everyone.
I mean, they've just sold. I mean, I think they sold every Vito Euro. The Euro 5, was it the last one?
Euro 6.
They sold every Vito because people wanted diesel. I don't know whether that was a good purchase. I'm not judging anybody who did because they're a great vehicle. It's a great cab. I don't know whether it was a great purchase with restrictions coming in, potentially keeping, you know, kind of fuel out of certain lanes and allowing electric vehicles in.
Well, that's, you just hit the nail on the head. I think in Shoreditch and I think a few councils are looking at this electric only roads. So if that does get forced in, they do something very similar in Norway. In Norway, just in the last 5 years, they've actually gone over to 50% now, which is electric vehicles. I think in the UK, we're running at 2%. Mm. But they were just over there, I was reading online a few months back. So they're really going to push, and they're going to force people, you know, a little bit with a carrot, a little bit with a stick, but we are being...
Well, crude oil will go up, won't it? If there's less being sold, it will go up in price.
Yeah.
The only other player in the market looks like Dynamo.
Yes, the Nissan, yeah.
They seem like mighty fine fellas as well.
Yeah.
I didn't like the look of the cab, I must say.
No, I agree.
It's a bit, yeah.
But the cost of it was pretty good.
Yeah.
45,
well,
I believe.
Yeah, and it does look like that might, well, any competition might be a containment with pricing.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, you know, well, that's a good thing. I think competition's good within the trade. I think we need as many manufacturers in the trade to give people choice. But like I said, for me personally, I don't think that's a battery only. There is no generator. So if at the end of your shift you get a nice Gatwick or whatever it may be, you might have to turn it down.
Well, that's the thing as well. Something we haven't been able to... You have a compellability to take a job if you're hailed on the street, aren't you? Now you might be able to say, oh, battery's running flat. I don't know where to charge it. I've turned down jobs. I guess. But I also imagine those buying the electric cab, well, they'll need to do all the work they can get.
Yeah.
But also... people who are looking to the future of the cab trade anyway. The only alternative to all of this is the LPG, isn't it?
Yay!
Now, you rent a cab. That's been in that taxi, your taxi, for 3 years now.
3 years now. It's got another 2 years to go,
it's not your cab.
It's not.
But would he have it done again? Because I know he can't with that cab, but would he see the price of it, which is about 11,000, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the price was. I don't know what he never told me what he'd done.
It seemed to be 8,000 when it was first introduced, when they was looking at it. And then it it increased in price to something like 11 or 12.
Hmm.
But it's everything in front of the gearboxes. So you keep the same gearbox and everything in front
of that.
Yeah. And what does it feel like to drive?
It's good.
It's good.
Yeah,
okay.
I like it. I know it's an old cab. But to be honest with you, it's one of the best cabs I've driven.
Oh, right, okay.
Seriously.
Oh, well. It is a TX2, isn't it? It's an old...
TX1,
yeah. Oh, right, okay. So,
TX1.
Oh,
it's
that...
It's got a little backup tank of unleaded in the back. Takes about £10 worth of fuel.
Yeah.
That burns quick. So you can't... If you really run on that all the time, it'll go down in no time. So really, you've got to get to... a gas LPG station and fill it right up.
So if you had that I'll come back to that, but if you had that converted over after 5 years and not just you're coming up to the 10, if you had that 15, if you had that plated after 5 years, would that be extended on to the 15 years? Would it be 20 years still? So it doesn't matter when you have it.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but it's all about the laws, isn't it, they're putting out now, isn't it? If they allow, I mean, that really should be going for another 10, 15 years.
Well, no, I agree with you.
Because it's the chassis and the bodywork's old.
Yeah, I think that, whereas, obviously, less pollution from
pollution LP, wise, it's
much better.
So it adds 5 years on. Do you know, so if they had it put on after 5 years, it would still give them the 20-year life?
I think you should.
I'll tell you a funny story.
Oh, go on.
Just to divert a bit. I I pulled over somewhere in Highbury, New Park.
Yeah.
Swept out the back of the cab. So I swept out the back of the cab. There's a woman washing, an old woman washing her car.
Right.
And the engine was running. She came over to me, tapped me on the shoulder, said, "Do you mind turning your engine off, please? You're polluting the street I live in." And I said, "What are you on about, madam?" "So you're polluting all your diesel fumes and all that, blah, blah." And I said, "Aha." But she got embarrassed. I said, "This is an LPG gas cab."
Well, there you go.
This
there
is healthier than your car. So she couldn't say nothing. And so I thought that was quite funny.
They're really, a funny lot on Highbury New Park.
All you,
they're all
funny. All your
funny,
drivers come round here with your engines.
The moment
running.
They put those plastic bollards in the centre of the road, they were never the same on a Highbury New Park. Let me tell you, funny lot.
It's a bit deceiving.
But where are the LPG? Are they everywhere in garages?
Few, apparently, my mate told me there's about 60 cabs.
Yeah, there's quite a few. There is quite a few.
In London, that are LPG, about 60, 65, something like that.
And you've got, Phil, you've got, what's the life on your cab left? Quite a lot.
No, quite a lot. Mine's a 13 plate, so I've got...
So you wouldn't be tempted with LPG?
Not LPG. Right. I think LPG would probably suit someone who doesn't necessarily work too many hours. And who's got a cab coming towards the end. I think that's definite.
Yeah, that's it. A lot of the boys are probably thinking, my licence is done, I'm done. Yeah, just to stretch them out a little bit.
Just to stretch it out, exactly. And like I said, because we're in a transition, aren't we, of technology. So I think what will happen is if you can stretch it out using LPG, if you're not doing, you don't want to, you know, strap yourself up to all that money. You know, after a few years, we should start seeing second-hand electric cabs.
Yes.
And then that's going to be possibly a better solution for that person then. So
I imagine there's going to be a lot because of the balloon payment. You know, renew it every 3 years, which is not a bad thing to do
it's
either.
It's a shame they can't make it cheaper, really, because I think all the drivers would love to breathe fresher air, wouldn't they?
It is.
Don't get me wrong, especially in London with so much traffic and pollution. You've got signs on the side of the road saying air pollution high.
Yeah.
You never used to see that about 10, 15 years ago, did you?
No, exactly.
And they're telling you to turn your engines off when you're idling and all that. So,
and the kind of LPG is, if you could say then in a few years' time, that's not valid either.
Well, no, because obviously it's emissions free, and LPG, how good it is, it's not emissions free.
Yeah, just
exactly. So there is still emissions. So.
And it has emissions capable at the moment, zero emission capable.
Exactly.
That is what's required, isn't it?
And that's what will be required by legislation. So
central heating boiler, isn't it? LPG.
Flew
out the back.
You know, so electric cabs. Yeah, that's the future. That's not just the future of the cab trade, but I think you'll see this is worldwide. You know, we're talking about every manufacturer, Audi, Mercedes, BMW, every manufacturer is going that way.
They've got the technology, I think it's ideal.
Well, just ideal. If you know, there's a bit of confusion with a dynamo. It seems to be related to Nissan in some way. What's the relationship there?
Okay, so what you've got there is it's a little bit like, so it's not Nissan officially.
Yeah.
So you've got a sort of a company who's doing a partnership with Nissan, and they'll buy the vehicle, and then they'll modify it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what the dynamo, but obviously you still got the benefit of the Nissan dealership, so I think that's a really good thing. And that's something that, you know, obviously the Metrocab, they, I don't think they've got that sort of network, and it's very important to have a network in, because then obviously you're not restricted to going to one place.
There's only one problem, you know, and that is Albert Bridge. It looks like it might be overweight without passengers going over Albert Bridge.
Yes. Well, the LEVC, the TXC is 2.1 tonnes. So it's quite...
weighty.
It's quite weighty.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure what it is on Albert Bridge. You'll have to make a ride of it.
I think it used to be 2 tonnes, and it was reinforced, because this did come out, and it's actually 3 tonnes.
You
should be okay. It has been reinforced.
A couple of big Texans in the back, you might have a problem.
Well, maybe.
I was just
going to
say that.
Well, six-seater, you know. But yeah, I mean, like I said, the look of it, I think, is good. Do you like the look of
it?
The new TXE, the electric.
I do.
Yeah, I do. But the only one thing about it is, you know, the highlight? It looks like a bit of a toy, plastic, a bit too
aerodynamic, isn't it?
Yeah,
they have had complaints, and hopefully they'll rectify that.
And it looks like the sign's always on all the time.
It's facing up rather than forward.
So I'm not sure if it's for hire or not.
I think they went a little bit too aerodynamic on that.
I need a little canopy over the top.
Yeah,
like the cabs.
Yeah.
I know there's mixed feelings about it in the trade, but this is my foreboding. If a purpose-built vehicle, a very, you know, specific vehicle, prescribed vehicle, isn't taken up, then we're all going to be driving saloon cars.
Correct.
We're not going to be driving a purpose-built vehicle that is specific to us, that is a proper purpose-built taxi. And so you've got to think twice before, listeners, you've got to think twice before you think of boycotting the purpose-built taxi, because we lose that off the street. We're all driving, we could be driving, people carriers, Priuses, whatever, because no one is going to come into the market, are they, and say, yes, I'll take a leap here with a cab trade. You know, they'll think, no, we've what, because you would have people watching this and saying, seeing how well it's doing. If it doesn't do well, there's no way they will come into the London market. So you've got to think about that before everybody says, I'm not buying, or ruling it out. Do the research, do the costing. Yeah. Phil says, I mean, there's savings to be had. The initial outlay, of course, but there's savings to be had. So I think there's a lot to think about. When are you getting yours, Phil?
I'll be hopefully putting my order in. Well, I've got one actually on a test drive for 48 hours next week. And hopefully, I'm hoping for the next month or so. And
what's the servicing like on them?
Servicing's really good. So it's about 25,000 miles intervals. Oh, that's good. So
well, there's a lot less moving parts, isn't there?
Exactly. So you've just got the running gear, which, by the way, all comes off a Volvo XC90. So it's all tested sort of moving parts. And I think a very important thing, because I know a lot of people from back in, is it LTI days and stuff like that, you know, bad service and the rest of it in the vehicles and what have you. But I think the biggest thing that's different is I don't think the cab trade has ever had a car manufacturer.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's very different, because they've got so much more resources and, you know, and sort of knowledge to pull on to build this vehicle. And there will be problems, as you know, if you go on Twitter, there has been problems with it. But there are problems with every vehicle.
Yeah.
No vehicle. I mean, even my TX has still got problems. So, you know, we've got to cut it a little bit of slack. A lot of people are on it thinking that it's got to be indestructible. But I think so far it's been all right. It's been okay.
Well, there's always problems with TXs. They come with gearbox and radiator problems. No, they come with that problem. So you've got one trialling. And hopefully
in a month, within a month or so, I'm going to put my order in, because I think it is the future.
Yeah.
And
okay, we've covered most things. Is there anything you want to say about it? If you've got any questions, listeners, you could tweet us or DM me, and we can put it to Phil. But is there anything left that we haven't covered that you think is important to know about it?
No. I think that the what you just said. I think, you know, do your figures, and try to be unbiased. You know, try to be, you know, the fuel is a massive part. So you have to look at your fuel.
So if you're paying it off over 5 years, do your sums over 5 years.
Exactly. And then, you know, you can look from then five with your balloon payment, which you can refinance. You know, you don't have to have all that in one go. You can refinance that. And then you do your 5 to 10 year and then sort of put that in there, because we all know a TX would probably need an engine and a gearbox anyway over 10 years. So you've got to factor that
in. And
the last
thing you might benefit from, because the subsidy is finite, isn't it? So when it goes, it might not be there anymore. It might be, but we're saying at the moment it's finite.
Exactly. So at the moment, you know, it's if you want it, you've got to get in there.
That's it. I'm looking to the hot air balloon. That's what I'm going to be working on.
Hot air balloon.
Yeah. Mind you, that wouldn't be allowed, would it, with all that gas?
It'd help us with the traffic.
Well, the flying carpet. Flying carpet didn't work, apparently. That private eye got the flying carpet. We're on.
bang, bang.
We're going for teleportation next. Yeah. That's it. We're going to blow them all out. The electric, forget it. We've got teleportation.
Beam us up, Sean.
I will, indeed. Imminently. All right. Thanks, Phil.
Thank you, Kevin
Morley. And, we'll be seeing you later on.
It was a teenage wedding, and the old folks wished them well. You could see that Pierre did truly love the mademoiselle. And now the young monsieur and madame have rung the chapel bell. C'est la vie, said the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell. They furnished off an apartment with a two-room robot safe. And ginger ale. But when Pierre found work, the little money coming worked out well. C'est la vie, said the old folks, the culture show you never can tell. They had a hi-fi phone, oh boy, did they let it blast. 700 little records, all rock, rhythm and jazz. But when the sun went down, the rapid tempo of the music fell. C'est
la vie, c'est the old folks. It goes to show you never can tell. They bought a souped up jitney, was a cherry red 53, and drove it down to Orleans to celebrate the anniversary. It was there where Pierre was wedded to the lovely mademoiselle. C'est la vie, c'est the old folks. It goes to show you never can tell. Truly love the mademoiselle. And now the young monsieur and madame have rung the chapel bell. C'est la vie, c'est the old folks. It goes to show you never can tell.
If you have to choose between going for a romantic dinner with Sean Paul Day or Mick Smith, which one would it be? You have to choose.
That's
one.
That's a very unfair question. That's extremely unfair question. I wouldn't choose. I would invite both of them.
You would. You can't. You just have to choose between. But you have to know when you turn up for the London Taxi Radio Show that one of them gonna have a hump.
One of them's gonna have to hump.
One of them is obviously going to
have a hump. I'll go for having dinner with Mick Smith then.
With Mick Smith, okay. Yeah, so may I ask you, Jamie, why Mick Smith?
Because he wouldn't have the hump. Sean Paul Day's always got the hump before he goes and does a live show.
He does, but yeah. Then I think, you see, I would go opposite. I would go with Sean because I would think when I turn up, Sean's going to probably then have a less hump.
He's going to have less of the hump.
Do you understand? Because you can imagine the rage in the Sean Paul Day when he knew you took Mick for a romantic dinner, but it wasn't him.
Oh, no, Sean wouldn't get the hump about that.
You don't think he would?
No.
Well, I'm not sure.
Sean definitely wouldn't get the hump about something like trivial like that.
Okay, so what would be your perfect evening with Mick Smith?
My perfect dinner? Great Suffolk Street, nice roast dinner, right? Nice roast turkey dinner.
Your table, would it be like a special? Would you request two candles, one candle?
No, I'm not that way inclined. Maybe Sean would request candles and things like that if he had dinner with Mick Smith.
You cheapskate. This is why you didn't want to take... No, this is why you didn't want to take Sean, because you knew it would be whole thing. He would demand candles, flowers.
And all that sort of thing. Yeah, definitely. And if you put this out on London Taxi Radio, I'm going to ring your neck.
he's very romantic, our Sean. You can see.
Oh, yes.
What? No, no, it doesn't go there. No, turn around. That's it. That's right. Are we back on? Oh, we're back. Bit of a technical issue there. Don't worry about it. I'll edit it out for the podcast, if I remember. Anyway. Okay, folks, that's all from me for this week. But if there's anything at all that you think we are not covering here at LTR, or anybody you want us to approach, challenge, or even discuss on the programme, then get in touch. You can DM us at Twitter, at London Taxi Radio, or even my personal account, which is at Sean Paul Day. You can go over and like the Facebook page and leave a message there. That's Facebook London Taxi Radio, or you can email me at sean@londontaxiradio.co.uk. Anything at all, get involved. It's a radio station there for cab drivers. So all you cab drivers out there and supporters of the cab trade, by all means get in touch and we'll see what we can do. Don't forget, next week we are live again from City Diesel. That's City Diesel at GSS. GSS next week from 7 p.m. Don't forget, be there. If you turn up, you'll get a free sticker, London Taxi Radio sticker. Who said we didn't give you anything? So there you go. Next week, City Diesel host London Taxi Radio at GSS. Be there And anybody who's got a question, anybody who's got something they want to provide, if you have a rant of the week or if you have a tweet of the week, you can record it on an app recorder and post it to us or email it to us. The email address is there on the Twitter site and the Facebook site. So there you go. That's it. That's our lot. And I'll leave you with a bit of Take On Me.